Well, good morning. I hereby call to order the Palm Beach Transportation Planning Agency meeting, governing board meeting. Today's Thursday, February 15th, 2018, and the time is 9:04 a.m. And our first order of business will be our roll call.
Stephen Abrams.
Here.
Mary Lou Berger.
Here.
Joni Brinkman.
Here.
Paulette Burdick.
Here.
Joelle Flores.
Here.
Ann Gerway. Carrie Glickstein. Stephen Grant.
Here.
Susan Haney.
Here.
Lynn Hubbard. Keith James.
Here.
Jim Koretsky.
Here.
Maria Marino.
Here.
Melissa McKinley. Fred Pinto.
Here.
Paula Ryan. Pam Triolo.
Maxwell.
Hal Valachet.
Here.
Catherine Waldron.
Here.
Robert Weinroth is excused. Steve Wilson.
We have a quorum, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Can we now have a moment of silence for the victims and survivors of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas shooting yesterday? Thank you. Would you all please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, and good morning, and welcome. I'd like to have Mayor Marino give us a brief welcome to her beautiful council chambers here in the lovely city of Palm Beach Gardens.
You're giving me the microphone?
Brief. I said brief.
Well, thank you all for joining us. As I was driving here this morning, I said, I really would love to host this every month since it's only about a five-minute drive from my house. But Cynthia just told me, she snuck out. Cynthia just told me I had to clear that through our clerk. But thank you for joining us. We have very nice facilities, as you can see, and we are going to be undertaking an expansion on this building and the next building that will CAC 5 and all that good stuff. So thank you for being here. We're happy to host you.
Great. Well, thank you. We greatly appreciate it now that we're going to be a roving TPA throughout the county. So we're looking forward to that. Our next item is the agenda for today. Nick, are there any changes?
I'm sorry, we're sharing.
Sharing the microphone today. We would like to request deletion of item 1H4 from the consent agenda. We'll be bringing that back at a future meeting. And then I also want to note, we have included under the information portion of the agenda items 3B and 3C. That's our congestion management process and the fiscal year 17 federal obligations report. We included those two items because they were deferred to this meeting from the December agenda, but we are only intending to present those items to you if you request us to do so at that time. We'd be happy not to present those to you if you don't need those items to be formally presented at this meeting.
Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Berger, a second by Commissioner Abrams to adopt the agenda, less item H4. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed. We'll now move to the minutes of December 14th, 2017. Are there any corrections or additions? I'll entertain a motion. Motion by Marino, second by Burdick to adopt the minutes as presented. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Right. Those opposed. No comments from the chair and member comments. At this time, I'm just going to really thank the staff and especially Valerie Nielsen for putting on such a great Safe Streets Summit. It was outstanding. We looked great, and I know that Broward County was very jealous because their event last year wasn't as great, and I know Miami-Dade's really sweating next year. So it was a great day, great venue, great presenters, and I just really want to applaud everyone who made that happen. So. At this point, are there any other member comments? Nope. Seeing none, well, we'll move to the Executive Director's report. Nick.
Madam Chair, first item is actually not on my report, but I wanted to highlight for you as we're moving around the county, we have actually created what we're calling a multimodal facilities and services graphic as part of your agenda this morning, showing the pedestrian and bicycle facilities first that are around the meeting location that we're visiting. So we want to highlight both the data sets that we've developed and the ability for someone to come to one of these meetings if they're traveling on foot or if they're traveling by bicycle. And then on the bottom half of that graphic, on the bottom half of the page, we're also showing the transit service lines, so in this case the bus routes that are serving this area, as well as the bus stops and the locations of those stops, And then if you choose to travel to our meetings by car, then we also show you how many travel lanes are on the major roadways leading up to each of our meeting locations. So we thought this was a great way to sort of highlight and bring awareness to our multimodal infrastructure around different parts of the county, even as we travel to different places for these meetings. In addition to that, I'm going to run through some of the items on my report. I'll skip item one, as Mayor Haney just covered that very well. The update on Brightline construction of the supplemental safety measures needed for quiet zone designation. We did receive, and I forwarded to all of our board representatives and alternates earlier this week, an update from the Brightline team. They are still scheduled to complete all of the improvements in the city of West Palm Beach. They hope to be done by the first week in March. They are moving from the north end of the corridor to the south, but they do expect to complete the entirety of the list of improvements that we have paid them, or will be reimbursing them, I should say, for by the end of March. And that's predominantly exit gates, additional sets of gates at 31 of the rail crossings in the FEC corridor. They will complete construction of those, ensure they are operational, and then be reimbursed for the cost of those constructions. I want to highlight on item three, the Human Services Transportation Summit is going to be held on Tuesday, February 20th. That focuses on best practices, networking, and improving coordinated transportation services. It's focusing largely on how do we provide rides to those who are unable to get to our fixed route system. How do we move them around the county? Number four, very important for us, and something that we would really encourage you to consider as an action item going back to your local commissions or councils, is March is Florida Bike Month, and we would love to see all of our member local governments participate in the celebration and promotion of safe bicycling throughout Palm Beach County by either a proclamation on your local agenda or even a special event during March. We are going to be participating in a bike to work ride in the city of West Palm Beach on March 16th, and would love to see more events like that where our TPA staff can help promote activities that recognize bicycling as a safe means of commuting in Palm Beach County. So if your local community is doing any sort of event like that, please let us know, and we'd love to help you promote and even participate in that kind of an event. Number five is a very important item. That we annually receive applications for funding through our local initiatives and transportation alternatives programs. Those applications for this year are due March 2nd. So if your staff is not already working diligently on the creation of their project applications, make sure they get that done and into us at our office by Friday, March 2nd. Following up on the success of our Safe Streets Summit and trying to help focus our attention on how to implement this concept of safer, more complete streets, we are going to be hosting a Smart Growth America Complete Streets Workshop on Wednesday, March 14th. So March is a busy month. 14th, we've got the Complete Streets Workshop. The 15th is your governing board meeting, and then we've got a bike to work ride on the 16th in downtown West Palm. Again, our target audience for this Complete Streets Workshop is you, the TPA board, as well as city, county, and DOT staff that want to learn more about how we can implement Complete Streets projects with a focus on being creative, cost-effective, and championed. We are especially hoping on the champion side to engage as many of you as possible to lead these conversations and push hard to get our projects to be as safe as they possibly can be. Two items just to highlight on the legislative report. First, you've probably all seen on a federal level, the White House recently released what they call a legislative outline for rebuilding infrastructure in America. We've provided a link to that on our website in case you're having trouble finding it online. You can also Google it. I'm not going to summarize that here, but I wanted to make sure you were aware of that. And then one item of note on the state level, the House Bill 33 seeks to make texting while driving a primary offense and to make it an enforceable action for a primary offense, enforceable action for a law enforcement to stop someone if they're distracting themselves, rather, while driving a motor vehicle. That seems to be moving through the legislature, and we're going to be paying attention to that along with a number of other bills. And then the last two items on the report are really items of local concern. So if these are in your community, Forest Hill Boulevard at 16th Place South, this is an intersection improvement project that will install a traffic signal at an intersection just east of Jog Road. And I wanted to make sure that you're aware that that's upcoming, and DOT is going to be having a public meeting to review the plans and the design details for that. And then in the Wellington area, State Road 80 at Forest Hill, Wellington, Royal Palm, I should say, that's actually a border, jurisdictional border between the two, there is a public meeting on February 28th to review the plans to add a third westbound left turn lane as well as a northbound continuous right turn lane at that intersection of State Road 80 and Forest Hill Boulevard. And Madam Chair, that wraps up my report to you this morning.
Great. Members, any questions of Nick on any of his executive director report? No, you're a busy person, and we appreciate all the wonderful things happening. We'll now move to our consent agenda. We've already removed item 4 from it. Is there any member wish to pull any other item from the consent agenda? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion to adopt the consent agenda as amended.
Second.
Motion by Pinto, second by Burdick. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, great. We'll now move to general public comments, and I do have one card. I'd like to invite Dr. Lori Vinicor forward. Welcome. Thrilled to have you here representing the Alliance of Delray.
Thank you. Yes, I'm Executive Vice President of the Alliance of Delray. Good morning, members of the board. We represent 94 communities between the Everglades and the ocean in South Palm Beach County. More than 250 actual associations are involved in that. Over 100,000 people are affected by this whole issue of the widening of Atlantic Avenue. I'm here today just to put the exclamation point on what President Bob Schulbaum spoke about in December. And there is a follow-up letter to that meeting that's in this little packet that I put in front of you. And there's a follow-up letter from him regarding that meeting. And also, there is the most recent Lake Worth Drainage District letter, which is on the top, explaining that they are committed to working closely with all the stakeholders along Atlantic Avenue to really expedite this, because we all know what an issue there is with the traffic and the constrained roadway of Atlantic. So we really need to move that more earlier than 2024 plus. So that's all. Thank you very much for all the work you do. And Nick was telling me that you're working on that issue.
Well,
thank
Dr. Vinicor, while you're here, before you leave, I was going to turn the mic to Nick to say, what can we as the Palm Beach TPA do to assist you in advancing this project?
So I think two things. One, you've already done, and it's very important that is a step this board has taken, and that is to add the widening of Atlantic Avenue, the construction of two additional travel lanes from Lyons Road to Jog Road, to your major project priority list. That action by this governing board says to the DOT, please find a way to implement that project as fast as possible. DOT, in response to that request, has actually said they're going to construct that project. They're doing the state environmental phase as well as the design and right-of-way acquisition completely with state money in the hopes that not using federal dollars will allow for the project to be delivered, to be built more quickly. This kind of goes along with one of the president's complaints that federal dollars cause projects to be built slowly. So the state has said we agree, at least in principle, with that concept, and we're going to use only state money to construct this project so that we can build it as quickly as possible. The second action that you can take is each year the DOT, in response to your priority list, shares with you what they call the draft work program, how they have advanced the projects you've asked them to fund in their five-year work program. At that time, you have an opportunity to respond to the work program and say, we like what you did, great job, we like what you did, but could you do these additional things? And that opportunity this year will be in December. They will present to you how they've advanced the funding for each of your priority projects. You'll have an opportunity at that time to say, great job, but if you could move Atlantic Avenue any faster, we would really appreciate that. So that's an opportunity for this board formally and collectively to say, again, this is a priority to us. Please move it as quickly as you can.
Great, excellent. Commissioner Abrams.
Madam Chairman, Dr. Vinicor, I appreciate all of the material and correspondence you provided, because I think it is enlightening. A lot of one of our members has made some charges about the Delray Alliance's record that I think you've rebutted here. Chairman, I move to receive and file the correspondence.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Second. So a motion by Commissioner Abrams, second by Commissioner Burdick. Any further discussion? All those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed. Commissioner Burdick.
Thank you.
Well, I wasn't going to say anything in response, but in response, it would be known that this is an abbreviated list of the items. Certainly, they have said this, but they have definitely have supported numerous other projects. But I appreciate your advocacy on your community, but it's our responsibility also to look at the traffic safety and the issues throughout Palm Beach County. And the most dangerous intersection, when we look at that, had another tragic, fatal accident this morning where people cannot, on Okeechobee Boulevard right now, go east of Jog Road. They expect the road to be closed for 6 hours. And I think we all express our sorrow for people who are on the road and people who are injured. Thank you.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Is there any other member of the public that would like to come forward and address the board at this time? Seeing no one come forward, we'll move directly to our action items. And our first item is a resolution establishing per capita member dues. Nick.
So, Madam Chair, I've actually grouped several items together under what we're calling Agenda Item 2A and entitled this items that will support the TPA's transition to an independent agency. And as brief background, these items under 2A are implementing specific tasks that you asked me to perform when you adopted Resolution 27-08. You told me in specific to create a TPA procurement process for the board to consider, and that was done in December and adopted. You asked me to create a future agenda item to implement per capita member dues. That's on this morning's agenda. You asked me for an administrative services agreement that would allow for some of our member agencies to provide a capital float or a loan, line of credit type of an agreement to the agency that would allow us to spend those dollars to operate and then reimburse those dollars back to the local government when we receive our grant reimbursement funds from our federal planning or federal partners, the Federal Highway and Federal Transit. You asked me to put a legal services contract on your agenda for action. That's on this morning's agenda as well. And you asked me to amend the existing agreement with Palm Beach County, where they provide staff and services to the TPA, to extend the time frame and allow us to have just an additional year with an option for further extensions if the transition is not able to be accomplished within that year, year and a half time frame. Again, those are all four of those items are on the agenda this morning. And then I just want to point out the additional items you asked me to bring to you, we are going to be bringing at future meetings, are finding a space for the TPA office to operate from, an office lease agreement, employee handbook outlining policies and procedures for our TPA employees when they're no longer county employees, and then any other operating agreements that we would need to be putting in place, like IT services, like communications, like audit services, insurance, et cetera, that support the agency's operation independent from Palm Beach County. So that's kind of the broad base. And then if I could take a moment to talk you through 2A1, the per capita member dues. First, I want to answer the question, why do we need per capita member dues? And that's really to provide the TPA with funds for non-reimbursable expenses. Our grants cover a lot of the things that we spend money on, but they don't cover everything. And we've listed a handful of things right here. They don't allow us to expend dollars on advocacy. So anything that this board says they want to accomplish either through the legislature or through the through Congress, we cannot spend agency funds that are grant reimbursable on any advocacy activities. They also don't allow us to spend money on peer exchange events. If we wanted to say, hey, let's bring folks from a city or an urbanized area of similar size and complexity to the Palm Beach County to our area and learn from them, that would be an expenditure that we couldn't make. Or if we wanted to travel to those places, that would be an expenditure we couldn't make with grant reimbursable funds. Promotional materials, as well as any local matching funds that we would use to attract those federal grant dollars, again, those dollars can't be reimbursable. They have to come from local sources. So what is the proposal on the table this morning? First, it is to say that the annual dues payment will be established at 10 cents per capita. And we're also suggesting in the resolution in your agenda that that amount will be fixed for the first 5 years, that we are saying let's give all of our members certainty that the amount will not fluctuate over the first 5 years. And then once we have that level of experience, we will bring to you a recommendation at that time for the board to either continue that amount or consider any changes that may be appropriate. But that gives you a sense that it's not going anywhere. We're not using this as a let's open the door and then change it to something else in year two. We are asking that the dues payment would be first paid to the TPA in the coming fiscal year, which begins October 1 for most of our local governments that are not the state of Florida. And we would ask for that dues payment to be made to the TPA by October 31st. So as you're building your budgets for fiscal year 19, we're asking for you to build this dollar amount, this dues payment, into your budget. Practically speaking, what do the amounts look like? Well, we've shown you all of the member agency local governments that have a voting seat on the TPA on the screen here, and we have provided the dollar amounts for each of you. I think the point in presenting this information is to say that we're not asking for a substantial contribution from any one of our member agencies, but we do believe that it is equitable and distributed. There are two points that I want to highlight in the list here. First is that Palm Beach County's dues amount would be based on the unincorporated area population of the county, not on the entirety of the county. That allows them to participate in an equitable fashion without paying twice for the people who are represented within a municipality in each of their districts. The second one is the Port of Palm Beach. We struggled quite a bit with the exact way to recommend a dues amount, but I want to explain what we did. Essentially, we took the approach that because the Port of Palm Beach, if we were to base it on population, it would be a large amount. If we were to base it on anything else, it would be dissimilar to all of the other local governments. We put them exactly in the middle of everyone else. We said, let's use the median value of all of the other member agencies that are part of the TPA Governing Board, and we suggested that they would fall right in between Jupiter and Palm Beach Gardens. We added those two numbers together, we divided by two, and that's how you get that $5,699. So I wanted to make sure you understood those two points. They're both spelled out in the resolution. Madam Chair, that's really all I have to say about this item. We are asking for your support of the resolution.
Thank you very much. Questions? Commissioner James.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Nick, how does this compare to what the municipalities are paying now?
So in the case of West Palm, you would be going from zero to $11,015. Right now, the municipalities are not contributing member dues to the TPA in any fashion. All of our local matching funds are being provided through our staff and services agreement by Palm Beach County, but those dollars that Palm Beach County are providing to the TPA are only being provided as matching funds for our FTA grant. They do not allow for, and if I jump back a slide, they do not allow us to use county funds for advocacy, for peer exchanges, for promotional materials. They are only providing dollars to us for non-federal matching fund purposes. So I think it's important to note, and I should have made this point in the presentation, this item is useful to the TPA whether or not the ultimate decision occurs to transition away from the county and be an independent agency. It's useful in the sense that it will provide us with local funds that allow for flexible, more responsive, and progressive activities by this agency that most of our counterparts that are doing great planning work throughout the country are already engaged in, things like these advocacy and peer exchange and promotional activities. So,
a quick follow-up, if I may, Madam Chair. I think, Nick, in order for us to justify this, we will need to have some more specific ideas, maybe even a proposed budget, as to what activities this is going to pay for. You got to help us make the case to our voters. And while it's fine in concept, I need more specifics to be able to go back and make the case that this is a justifiable increase.
Thank you, Commissioner Waldron.
I understand your message, but from a revenue perspective, I would argue that the port's probably much further down in terms of what our income is. And that number putting us in the middle, I think, is a bit onerous for us. So I'd like to maybe see if I could discuss that with you, because it seems pretty high for us given what we bring in each year.
Thank you. Mr. Koretsky.
You know, the issue of the independence, Jupiter has not had any issue with the way it was working, but to the degree that it appeared that we're moving down this path of independence, Jupiter certainly wants to be a member, and I just wanted to share to the board here that we did have Nick come and give a presentation, and so now, you know, all of the council members in Jupiter are well informed. That was for those municipalities, because none of us individually have the authority, and so what that accomplished for me is now, you know, I know as we go forth here that my council has heard about it, and to the point that it appeared to be inevitable on the independence, you know, I can go ahead and support these kinds of things. But I think one point, so I wasn't expecting, as follow-up to Commissioner James's question and response, I don't see us getting anything extra on services, as I understood it. It's just that the funding for the county is now going to be more distributed. So unlike maybe other areas, Nick, where you say, you know, they're already maybe having some enhanced stuff, I don't know that we're getting anything enhanced. I think it's just a sharing more of the funding. Is that not the case? And I was accepting that to be the fact. I just don't want people to think like this money per se gets us more than we were getting, because I don't think it does.
Well, I think that it does and it doesn't. I mean, to you as an individual municipality, does it guarantee that you will have more funding for a particular type of project? No. Paying member dues does not say, oh, now we'll make sure we give more projects to West Palm Beach. That's not the intent of this. It does allow the agency to do the items that I've listed up on the screen that we cannot do today. It allows us to have a funding source so that this governing board can tell me, let's be engaged in advocacy for a particular outcome in the legislature that we, you know, I don't know if all of you recall, but a couple of years ago we actually tried to go down the path of creating legislative and policy positions for this board. It was an interesting conversation that didn't come to conclusion, in part because we weren't quite sure what we all wanted to advocate for together, and in part because even if there was agreement on the board level, there wasn't a mechanism for us to act on those mutually agreed upon policy positions. So I do think member dues create additional flexibilities for the agency that don't exist today that allow us to be more responsive to you as a board collectively, not as individual municipalities. That being said, I do think there's also a clear case to say that it is we're suggesting an equitable distribution of the small portion of local dollars needed for this agency to function is more appropriate than having the county be the only contributor to our agency as far as local funds are concerned.
Mayor Grant?
Couple questions. One is that, are you saying that currently Palm Beach County pays $0 for this fund as well, for this type?
No. In fact, Palm Beach County pays all of the matching funds required for our Federal Transit Administration grant, which is this year in the ballpark of $110,000.
Okay. And so, but this, the funds that you're asking is for the matching or for advocacy and other items?
So the local funds are able to be used for both matching to the Federal Transit grant and for other outcomes that we don't currently have a revenue stream for,
okay,
such as advocacy, peer exchange, et cetera.
Okay. So my comments regarding that is that I think this is very fair. You know, I spoke with Gregory Stewart, the executive director for the Broward MPO, and he says how foolish we are for not having an advocacy program. There are millions and almost billions of dollars in federal and state funding available for roads and other transportation, and we do not have an extra say in there. Not to say that Nick isn't doing as much as he can, but it would be imperative that we actively advocate for more money for our roads. And that's kind of where, you know, we're looking at 10 cents per person. I know we all have our own lobbyist bills, and so this is very reasonable, I believe, based upon the population. And, you know, as for any sort of travel, I think you would need prior approval from the board for anyone to go anywhere or something, or for someone to be approved to come here. And this is also for all the matching expenses that we have that we will be reimbursed. And so this is just the first year. And so as the years go on, we are getting replaced for our matching. We will have more money to spend for advocacy. Is that kind of the plan?
That's our hope, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Mayor Curley.
My question is, this is laying out the way to become independent, is my understanding. This is laying out that path. What does that do for the smaller cities that don't have a membership now? From their perspective, are we expanding membership? Are we going to have a small city seat that rotates? I mean, how would we provide for the cities that aren't at the table now?
So let me answer that in two ways. First, we are not suggesting that transitioning from a hosted agency to an independent agency has to change the voting membership of the governing board. Now, if the board wants to say, let's also talk about the voting membership, you certainly can tell me exactly what you think it ought to be that it's not today. You have a cap in statute right now of 25 members. We only have 21. You have the ability to say, let's change it from 21 to 20 whatever, and here's how we'd like to see it changed. But that's not being discussed right now. That's not part of the requested action. The transition from hosted to independent does not affect voting membership at all. That being said, I would also submit to you that we are the transportation planning agency for all of Palm Beach County. And just because your city does not have a voting membership or does not make a small local contribution to the agency's operations does not mean we fail to provide transportation planning services to you. And I'll submit three examples to you that illustrate this point. First, the Village of Tequesta. We actively engaged with the village mayor and council as well as their staff on the best use of a DOT maintenance project that is under construction right now. DOT was just going to resurface US 1 through the Village of Tequesta and maintain it as a six-lane road. We engaged Treasure Coast as well as our planning consultant support staff to figure out a better way to use those maintenance funds. Tequesta doesn't have a vote, but they were a clear beneficiary of planning work being done by this agency to ensure that their infrastructure was as good as it could be. Now, on the flip side, we had a similar conversation with the town of Lantana about a resurfacing project and said, would you be interested in making a change to a DOT resurfacing project? We know you're not on the TPA board, but we're happy to provide transportation planning support to you. And Lantana said to us, thanks for your interest. We don't want it to be any different. Leave us alone. And that's fine. That's their right to express that opinion, and we are not going to force them to change if they don't want to, but we're offering our resources as an agency because they are within Palm Beach County. And I think the third example is the Village of North Palm Beach, where we've actually partnered with them on the creation of a village-wide transportation master plan for all of the roadways that pass through and within their village limits. They paid half of that cost, and we paid half of that cost as an agency to allow for them to identify what they would like to accomplish on their area roads. Again, they are not a voting member, but they were benefiting from the transportation planning funds and expertise that this agency can bring to them. So I would just say voting membership is how we've proposed to determine who pays any local member dues. But that does not at all mean if you're a non-paying municipality that you get no benefit from this agency. Long-winded answer, I apologize, but I wanted to make a few examples to help illustrate the response.
Mayor Pinto.
I think.
Member Kinley.
No, go ahead.
Sure?
She's just going down the table.
Okay. I would like to echo support for the points that Mayor Grant made. From a strategic perspective and going forward, I think it's imperative that we increase our leverage opportunities to pursue different strategies and certainly to pursue different funding opportunities for the county. What I'd like to just put in context, though, is the process and procedure. And if I understand what you're asking us today is to actually vote on enacting this. Before we are asked to vote on this, I would ask if we could all have an opportunity to go back, because we're voting on a budgeting item for our councils and commissions. I'd like the opportunity to go back to my council and get them to say, yes, we agree as a council that we'll put that in our budget and we'll agree to do that going forward. caller, whatever the disposition is. And once I've gotten that from my counsel, then I would be in a position to come back to vote on this with this board. And I would just ask from a procedural standpoint if we could have that opportunity to approach it that way.
We could always approve it subject to approval of your entities on the other side.
Okay, in other words, we'd have to come back and say,
otherwise,
yeah, they approved it, or no, we didn't approve it.
Well,
if that happens, though, what if the majority comes back and say that their local councils or boards or didn't approve it? Does that decertify it? Does that reverse it?
No, I know. It makes it difficult. However, if every member of us has to bring back a resolution, well, I mean, we can certainly discuss that as a method. Mayor McKinley.
You get fired.
That's true. I have a majority of my commission here, so I think we can vote it. That's true. I like this model. I think it's great, and I've got a homeless resource center that could follow the same model and get city involvement. But I just a comment. I just one comment, because I was part of the team before I became an elected official. I think it's a little disingenuous to say there was no advocacy program, because the county's in-house lobby team and the six firms that we have contracted have always worked hand-in-hand with the MPO on transportation funding in Tallahassee. That's not something that has gone by the wayside all these years. This is just making it a little bit more official. Thanks.
No, point well taken. Commissioner James.
Thank you. I have to echo the comments by Mayor Pinto. What you're asking us to do is to, in effect, approve an increase. Well, there is no line item on our budget now, so to create a line item for an expenditure, and again, I go back to my earlier points, I don't know what the cost justification is and how to make the case for doing that. So from a procedural standpoint, unless I move that we table this until we have some time to get that information. It sounds like you've made a presentation to Jupiter, Nick, about the TPA, and perhaps you might want to do a little road tour to other municipalities to help us understand what it is that we will be getting if we approve this that we aren't getting now, because I don't know the answer to that, and I can't make that case.
Commissioner Abrams.
Madam Chairman, it's almost like a glass half full versus half empty. What if we made a motion to approve this resolution in concept? It wouldn't bind any of the municipalities to any of the figures there, and then we can follow up with the additional information that I think is justifiable. You know, we're in February, and the budget year, of course, doesn't really occur till the summer, so there's plenty of time if we approve in concept, and then the cities can examine this in more depth, and then we'll be in a position to make a final decision on it. Yeah, so Madam Mayor, I would substitute that for unless that's
we have more cards. Commissioner Brinkman.
I second that.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second to approve this in concept.
Just to clarify, just the concept, so that means that the figure's not set in stone then, right?
Right. I mean, it's conceptual.
Okay.
All right. So under discussion, Commissioner Brinkman.
I just wanted to echo the fact that Palm Springs is similar to Jupiter. We had invited Nick already because, I mean, when this first discussion started, it was of concern of what the due structure would be and the impact on the smaller cities. And so he came and did the presentation. We basically had a consensus of the council that we're fine. So if you have to do some kind of resolution thing, which I think is going to be more time-consuming and complicated and drag it out, that's fine. We can do that. But we feel that's an equitable due structure for us, and we're prepared to add that into our budget this next year.
Right. Commissioner Kurowski.
Just, you know, the critical action to move forward becomes the official decision that we're going independent. So the irony here is, you know, we had a vote, what, 3-4 months back that was, I think I might have been the only dissenting one that was saying we're just going to move forth with the concept And so voting on this today, one way or the other, I'm okay with any option that was thrown out here, because voting on this still is contingent upon that independence. Now, Jupiter, having had the presentation, we're coming around to the thought that it's inevitable and on that basis. But even if we approve this as it was, until that other action happens, aren't they related? I mean, and when is that going to happen? So, I mean, I'm not trying to belabor this conversation, but really that's the critical. When everybody gets over that hurdle that, yes, we are going to be independent, then these other things kind of fall in line, I think.
Mayor Grant.
You know, I did quick math, and it's 1/100th of a percent of the general fund for Boynton Beach. You know, I can't authorize anything like that, but the city manager or anybody from the city staff can represent that. So if, you know, the other way to do it is a percentage, or I'm okay with 1/100th of a percent of the general fund from each municipality or county. We could do it that way if you don't want to do it based on resident. But, you know, as you, Commissioner James does have a, you know, good point. It's like, what are we using this money for? And so I think that we should, you know, approve it in concept based upon what we like to see here, whether it be a percentage of the budget of the general fund or based on a per diem per resident, and, you know, explain that what we're getting is that we're starting the independence movement of the TPA for the non-matching funds, the advocacy, the travel programs, and to get, you know, not, and so that we can be a better planning agency. And so I'll move forward with the motion to go back to our commissions to approve this in concept, and we can finalize anything, I guess, at the next meeting.
Councilmember Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I see three things here that are taking place. Riviera Beach in a unique position with the Port of Palm Beach, like Commissioner Walden stated. Even though they're independent district, they're kind of land strip right now. And with that independent district, actually home in Riviera Beach. Commissioner James talked about the budget impact. When we have these sound bites that go back to our community, the one thing that's going to be structured in that sound bite is going to be the independence of this entity. We want to make sure that our residents understand the uniqueness as we improve Palm Beach County transportation and these access, and as we lobby or we do outreach. I think our residents need to be brought along with this process. Not to say I'm not against it, but what I'm saying is when that word independent means something, and they must be educated what that really means. To someone, you may get that one uneducated person from the public that come to the mic all the time saying that this commission has supported privatization of transportation. And me personally, we want to make sure that we do our parts educating everyone to support this so we can come. I don't worry about the money, but I am also talking about that process of that conversation of independence and what that means to all of Palm Beach County and going back home and having that discussion.
Mayor McKinley.
Could I ask that staff, so that we are all on the same page when we go back to our individual boards, that staff draft a resolution for us highlighting exactly what we are approving, and that way everybody is approving the same thing.
That's a great idea. Okay, so we have a motion by Commissioner Abrams and a second by Mayor McKinley to adopt this resolution conceptually, and to have staff draft a model resolution for all of us to take back to our entities. Any further discussion? Commissioner James.
I just need clarification on what conceptually means. Does that mean the specific amounts that were outlined are going to be part of the motion? And basically, help me understand, Commissioner Abrams, what you mean by conceptual approval.
The concept of the title as before you, but we can limit it instead of 10 cents per capita, you know, a dues amount based on per capita. So we wouldn't specify necessarily the 10 cents, but I do think that a per capita allocation is the fairest, and I think that's the concept we'd want to put our stamp of approval on while all the members go back to their municipalities.
Okay.
I mean, 10 cents to me is very reasonable and fine, but if it makes it more palatable just to advance the concept of per capita, I agree with the 10 cents, but I'm just trying to be accommodating.
Thank you. Mayor Gerwig.
I agree with the 10 cents, but back to my other question about those who aren't captured in any of that are still receiving a benefit. I'd like to look at a way for those that aren't at the table. I'm really complicating this with this concept, but I do agree with the 10 cents per capita because it's people that we're serving. It's transportation for people, but we have kind of created this group that's not doing their 10 cents by this process, unless I misunderstand.
Commissioner Brinkman.
So based on that comment then, are we going to see a draft resolution at our next meeting before we distribute it to everyone? Because now I don't know what the resolution is going to say. Is it going to say per capita or 10%? Because it's going to change.
Well, per capita remains.
Per capita remains.
But now it's an unknown of how much it's going to be, and that complicates it even more.
No higher than 10 cents.
Okay. If that's going to be in the resolution. Okay.
Is there consensus that's what the resolution will say? No greater than 10 cents per capita? Okay. That helps. Mr. James.
I'm still having difficulty with the concept. Listen, I'm happy with the direction in which we're moving as an MPO, but wearing my hat as a city commissioner, I have a fiduciary obligation, so I need to somehow figure out. And I don't know if it's going to be part of this motion. That's why I said we should table this thing until we have more information coming from staff that we could take back. But be that as it may, if we're moving toward a conceptual motion, I still have difficulty because I don't have the information that I need to even approve it in concept. What are we getting with this move that we aren't getting today? And I hearken back, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So how do I talk to my fellow commissioners and say, we are moving in this direction because... Fill in the blank for me, because I don't have that information now.
Mayor McKinley, you want to answer that question?
I will answer that question. We actually have the draft resolution right here under item 2A1, and that's the resolution that we could bring back to our boards. Although you would have to change maybe section 1C, that the annual dues amount shall be calculated as no greater than 10 cents per capita for the first 5 years. But this, we already have the draft resolution right here. That's your concept.
Mr. Abrams.
And the reason I proposed this instead of tabling is because I think it's important that our board give a stamp of conceptual approval to this as you go back to your municipalities so that they know we're actually recommending this, but yet we are going back to the municipality so that the questions can be answered and we can specify the non-reimbursable funding that could occur, et cetera, the questions, Commissioner, that you have. So that's the intent behind this.
And if not behind it.
Yeah.
Councilmember Kretzky.
Well, as the motion maker had indicated, what we was still on the floor was the concept of per capita. And I just want to say I've always felt that I represent Tequesta and Juno Beach, so I think all of us kind of collectively take in the locals, smaller ones, the amount extra to try to collect from them may not be worth all the effort. And I think you ought to share that with us, Nick, so that we realize because, if it makes 9 cents versus 10 cents, I'm just saying, because the collection of that may be more difficult. It's going to be easier for someone to say, well, I'm up here and I have a say, right, than for us to go to a much smaller municipality and say, well, you have to pay, but, you don't have a say. So I'm just emphasizing that. Is it really worth it? So I support the per capita, and I think that to some degree there's a logic to me anyway, and I think it may be easier if it's just the membership, government. So that's just a thought.
Mayor Gerwig.
So I'm not trying to complicate this. I agree. Jim, I think that you could be right. It could be not worth that amount. It's just from the perspective of home rule and the perspective of individual governments that no matter how small or large we are, we have autonomous functions So, and I'm not trying to complicate it, and you're probably right. It's probably not an amount that would be worthwhile, but I just wanted to bring that point out.
All right, so we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Nay.
Let the record reflect Commissioner James voted in opposition. Thank you all. You know, it's important. You know, we've been having this conversation for a long time. It's important that we move forward, and I think the conceptual model is a good one. So let's move this thing forward. All right, we will now take up item 282.
Yeah. And Madam Chair, I do want to point out that one of the items on the agenda, 2A4, is actually suggesting the creation of a steering committee of a smaller group of governing board members to help me anticipate and flesh out some of the detailed issues that we've been raising at the full board. I know we're not on that agenda item. You can debate whether you want to do it or not, but I do want you to understand some of the logistics of debating these questions in a 21-member board are tricky. But that being said, I really appreciate your feedback on item one. So, item two. The issue here is the TPA is looking for conceptual agreement of a draft document, an interlocal, that could be executed between this TPA governing board, which is a separate and unique legal entity from each of its members. So the TPA governing board could execute an agreement like the one in your backup material with up to at least two and up to four member agencies, whereby those member agencies would provide temporary local funding to support this agency's operations until our federal reimbursement payments are received. So what I'm saying is, right now, when I pay our staff salaries, when I pay our consultant invoices, I'm paying those bills with a county dollar. I accumulate all of those expenses. I have all the receipts. I turn them into Federal Highway and to Federal Transit through the Florida Department of Transportation. They review the receipts, and they give me a reimbursement check from those federal grant agencies. But I need to spend a local dollar first to keep my doors open in order to be able to reimburse those expenditures. The county, as our host, has provided that temporary local funding to allow us to operate. The intent of this item is to establish a distributed relationship between more than one. Again, we're looking for at least two, but not more than four, because logistically that becomes complicated. A distributed relationship with more than one of our member agencies. Each member agency would provide us with access to up to $300,000 so that we would have between six and 1.2 million available to us as an operations fund. We would borrow that money from the municipality or the county or the port. Any of our member agencies could be in that position of providing that that temporary funding. We would draw from the revolving fund. We would use that to pay our staff salaries, our meeting expenses, our consultant contracts. We would accumulate those invoices. We would get the reimbursement funds, and then we would give the money back to the member agency. In exchange for that, we would compensate the member agency for all of the estimated staff costs that they would have to allocate to this agreement to make it possible for us to have access to these funds. Now, that's it in a nutshell, and I want to highlight three key terms in the draft agreement. First, that we are saying the spending of the agency is governed by our agency budget, which is called a Unified Planning Work Program. That's a document that is adopted by this governing board. The member agency providing access to temporary local funds cannot limit the usage of those funds if our spending is consistent with the budget you approve. So that's a key term of the agreement. We don't have to follow local government additional policies or demonstrate to the local government providing their temporary funds to us, that we're spending money on things they like. we just spend money on things that are in our budget that you as a board adopt. Second, that we would reimburse the member agency when we are reimbursed. So we would borrow money from these temporary fund accounts, we would get a reimbursement check, and we would send it back to those member agencies. And then third, and very key for each of our member agencies, is the member agency is not ultimately responsible for any TPA liabilities. So if we mess up, the board, this entity is responsible for our actions. I'm the entity or the individual carrying out the budget that you allow me to operate within. The municipality or the county or the port doesn't incur any liability for things that we do wrong. We have to pay those bills. So those are the key terms. I hope I gave you enough of a framework to have a discussion on this. But again, we're asking for conceptual approval. The idea is I would take the agreement to all of our member agencies and say, are you interested and in a financial position to provide this service to the TPA? Hopefully, we will get at least two and not more than four member agencies to say, yep, I'm in that category. I'll put it on our agenda. We'll take it to our governing board, and they'll agree with this. And then I will bring those executed agreements back to you and say, these are the terms and conditions substantially similar to what you saw that these member agencies have approved. Does this governing board want to enter into this relationship?
Great. Questions? Mayor Pinto.
Yeah. Once again, the procedural model for doing this, you said you would reimburse the agency for administrative costs. Will you be paying any kind of interest rate of return for those funds?
So I'll be very candid. That any interest rate or service fee associated with the temporary use of those funds is not a reimbursable expense. We would intend not to pay that because you as a member agency are providing a service to us to support our operations, not to make money. That being said, I also will be candid and say we are going to be estimating and putting into the agreement in your backup material the amount of staff time and effort we believe is reasonable for you to provide access to these funds.
Okay.
And we will be paying you based on that estimate.
Here's what I'm asking. This would be a revolving model. Every year, the agency would say, here's it. And to me, why incur this back and forth administrative activity? Why can't we just say, here's your $300,000. If you want to give us a fee and forget about all the reimbursement transactions on the transaction level, you have the money and you can reimburse yourself in essence because the money will be there. And that would avoid this additional administrative banking activity back and forth, which is not the kind of business that most of us are in.
Sure.
That makes sense?
It does. And maybe a conceptual approval of the agreement that you have, a municipality could come back to us and say, we want to tweak the language as far as how often the withdrawals and repayments occur, and that's within the conceptual framework.
Yes.
Mayor Marino.
Well, Nick, you've done a good job of presenting this, and I know you've come to our city and spoken with us and with our city manager, and we're in favor. So just want to let you know.
Further comments or questions on this matter? And I'll entertain a motion. A motion by McKinley and a second by Marino. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed. Great. Thank you. Now move to agreement for legal services. Nick.
All right, Madam Chair. We are recommending that the selection committee process is recommending to you that the TPA governing board establish an agreement for legal services with the law firm of Weiss, Sirota, Helfman, Cole, and Bierman. Frankly, the reason this item is even on your action item and not your consent agenda is because this is one of those key actions that you asked me to perform in order to facilitate the transition to independence. Otherwise, we would have looked at this as a relatively routine execution to support the TPA's operations. But I do want to highlight for you, because it's an action item, that the agreement will run through June 30th of 2020. There are provisions for extending it up to two additional years if necessary, but there is a not-to-exceed amount in the agreement of $125,000. If we wanted to extend the agreement and we needed more money, we would have to come back to the TPA Governing Board and ask you for approval for that. I also wanted to mention, because he is here, that Paul Googleman, and I'm actually going to ask him to come up to the podium just briefly and be recognized, would be the lead counsel from the law firm of Weiss Serota. And I wanted to introduce him to this governing board and just say a couple of things on his behalf. First, Paul personally has served as legal counsel for the statewide organization of MPOs, the Metropolitan Planning Organization Advisory Council, for 25 years. So a tremendous amount of legal representation experience for MPO work in the state of Florida. He's also served in that capacity for the Space Coast TPO, the Brevard County area, and is recently was selected to provide legal services as lead counsel to the Sarasota Manatee MPO. So we are getting a very experienced legal representation with this agreement, and then also his firm, through the alternate in our contract, Alan Gabriel, is providing currently legal services to the Broward MPO. And I also wanted to highlight that he and Mr. Gabriel together both were able to facilitate the transition of the Broward MPO and the Space Coast TPO from being hosted by their county governments to operating as independent agencies. So we think they're very uniquely suited to provide the kind of legal support that this agency needs right now, and I'm excited to recommend approval of this contract to you, and just wanted to give Paul a chance to say anything I may have omitted from his resume.
And before Paul speaks, I also want to state, as chair of the state MPO for the last 5 years, Paul's probably the foremost legal expert on MPOs in the state of Florida. So it's been a pleasure to work with you, and look forward to you making some comments to our board.
Mayor Haney, Nick, thank you. I hesitate to be called an expert at anything. That's usually where trouble starts. But in any event, I'm delighted to be here. I really am excited about having the opportunity to represent the TPA. It's a great organization. It has a solid reputation, believe it or not, on the state level, which speaks well for all the members here. I'll tell you on a personal note, I'm also glad to be here because some 40 years ago, I started my legal career working for Palm Beach County. I was a law clerk for two different summers working on the Palm Beach County Transportation Impact Fee, which was the first transportation impact fee in the state to be upheld by an appellate court. So, but in any event, I really appreciate being here, and I look forward to having an opportunity to meet and work with each of you on a personal level.
Thank you, Mr. Googleman. Any member have a question for Mr. Googleman? Mr. Abrams.
Donna. Oh, there you go, Donna. Anyway, I'm sure Donna Rainey, who was providing our legal services, knows that this is a without clause transaction here, and obviously in furtherance of our intention to move down this independence path. So Donna, you've done a great job.
Thank you. That's well stated. So we have a motion by Mayor McKinley, a second by Commissioner Abrams, to approve the agreement for legal services. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Thank you.
Congratulations. Welcome aboard. We'll now move to item 4, TPA Steering Committee. Nick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Once again, I just want to mention the idea behind this item is that I could really use a sounding board. I know that there are going to be other items that come up as we try to transition ourselves from a hosted to an independent agency. I don't want to be making those recommendations to this governing board in a vacuum. I would love to benefit from the kind of collective wisdom of a smaller group of elected officials that would help me walk through these issues. So my request is that you would create, as is a permitted action by your bylaws, a committee of governing board representatives or alternates that would help to facilitate these kinds of TPA transition activities. And they would only be acting, again, in an advisory capacity to the full governing board, but they would allow for a little more detailed discussion of some of the matters that are going to be coming before you. So our suggestion is that a five-member committee might be appropriate, and we would think that the chair and the vice chair would be two members of that group. But again, this is at the pleasure of the governing board, so you can do it with it as you please, but I just need you to understand that some of these issues are tricky, and I would certainly benefit from having a smaller group as a founding group.
Under discussion, Commissioner Waldron.
Yeah, I'd like to suggest Commissioner Ryan be on part of that.
All right. Mayor Grant.
I'd also like to volunteer.
Yeah, I'd like to keep, you know, I think geographical, since I represent the south end of the county and Commissioner Ballachet the north, I'd like to see a west and then some central as well, so as far as some, and small and large as well. So, Commissioner Mayor Pinto.
I'd like to participate on that panel.
Is the western individual? Okay. All right, so we've got a central and Commissioner Okay.
Madam Chair, I
remove
this slate
for
the transition to Derek.
Mr. Ryan, are you okay with that?
Yeah.
Okay.
She did have time.
All right, so we have a motion by Commissioner Abrams. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second by Commissioner Waldron. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed. Great. Thank you.
Clarification? And
yes.
We're going to have one additional. The small, Joni Brinkman.
Excuse me, say that again.
We were going to have, this is the transition. I thought we were looking for east, west, large, and small, and just making sure that the motion included as a small representative, Joni Brinkman, from the village of Palm Springs.
Okay. No? Okay, that's fine. You want to serve? All right, will the motion maker... We'll have a substitute motion. Okay, so.
Oh, really? No.
It was Abrams and Waldron.
Beautiful.
All right, so the motion includes representing small cities, Joni Brinkman. All right, we'll vote again. Okay. All those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed. Great. Thanks so much. All right, we will now move to item 5.
So, Madam Chair, this, as background to this item, there is an existing two-party agreement between the TPA Governing Board and the Palm Beach County Commission. That agreement provides staff, office and meeting space, that temporary access to local funds as a revolving fund to allow us to operate as an agency, local matching funds for our FTA planning grant, as well as legal support. All of those items are key items in the staff and services agreement. And I want to mention the agreement that says it provides staff to this governing board. What that means is I, as the director of the TPA, am a county employee. All of our team at the TPA are county employees. So one of the items that we're going to be talking about in this transition is how to make that, how to transition our staff and myself into employees of this agency, not of Palm Beach County. So just a sidebar, but the current agreement, the key here is that the current agreement terminates on September 30th of this year. In the resolution that said bring items to us to allow us to transition to an independent agency, one of the things you asked me to do was to seek an extension, not for the 5 years allowed by right in the agreement, but only for an additional year, because it would keep a little bit of our feet to the fire on this independence conversation, but it would recognize that we probably won't be finished by September of this year. So this amendment accomplishes just that. It extends the term from September 30th of 18 to September 30th of 2019. It creates an option in the agreement to extend it for an additional 2 years at the pleasure of the TPA Governing Board. It also reduces the notice period. If we were to move out of the county office spaces, which is one of the actions that could signify that the TPA will be operating independently at that point, it reduces the notice period for that action from what is currently in the agreement, 180 days or 6 months, to only 90 days. That termination period is only available to the TPA, so the county can't say, hey, we're going to stop hosting you within 90 days, but the TPA could say we're going to be moving out in 90 days. So I want to make sure that's clear. And then it also, and this is an interesting one based on the timing of it on the agenda, it terminates county legal support when the TPA establishes an agreement for separate legal services. So we've already established an agreement for separate legal services, so action on this item, once approved by the county commission, and it hasn't gone on their agenda yet, we would be hoping to bring it on a county commission agenda in March. Once it's approved by both parties, it would terminate the county's legal support for this agency, and we would be looking to Weiss Serota for that service instead. So hopefully I've walked through the high points of the content of this amendment, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mayor Marino.
Well, we've been having this discussion for quite a while, and that's about time we have the resolution. So we're in favor.
Any further questions on the resolution? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion. All right, motion by Marino, second by Flores. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Very good. Let's move forward to our targets for our safety performance measures.
Madam Chair, again, I appreciate your perseverance through all those more administrative items. Now we get to do the fun work, the transportation planning for Palm Beach County, and I'm actually going to bring up Andrew Euler from our staff. He is our TIP coordinator as well as leading our efforts on the required performance measures for transportation planning, and he's going to present this important discussion to the board this morning.
Welcome, Andrew.
Good morning, everyone. As Nick mentioned, I'm going to be discussing safety performance measures, and really I'll be up here probably a few more times throughout the year because we're required federally to pass these targets for performance measures to meet national goals. The safety one is probably the most important. The other ones that I'll get to later on to highlight bridge condition, pavement conditions, more, you know, state of facility. But I think safety in lives is going to be the one that we care most about. So, just a little background on performance-based planning. This is really just linking our investment decisions and our priorities to quantitative data. So how well are we actually improving the system and the lives of the citizens in this county. Performance-based planning has really been around for a while. So even here at the MPO, we've had our congestion management process for years, a couple of decades, and then we've also updated that to have other measures related to performance planning. So it's not really new to us at the MPO level. What is new is with the passage of MAP 21 back in 2013 is having these MPOs throughout the nation and the states set performance measures for national goals. So we are required, well, the state's required, and we are required here at the MPO to adopt targets to meet these national goals and then report on our progress annually. Here are the performance measures that are required for us to set goals for, or targets, sorry. The one today, safety, is due pretty soon here. And then system performance, which gets into more of travel time reliability of vehicles and freight. We have bridge condition, pavement condition, and then asset management plan and freight plan at the state level, and then the planning requirements. And so the planning requirements is really us adopting these targets and then showing in our plans, like the long-range transportation plan and the transportation improvement program, how we're going to meet these targets. So our vision at the Palm Beach TPA, and you can see on the board over there as well, a safe, efficient, and connected multimodal transportation system. So I just wanted to highlight again that safety has been a priority and a goal for some time here at the TPA. And here are those measures that we need to set targets for safety. So there's five measures. It's going to be number of fatalities, rate of fatalities per 100 million vehicle miles traveled, number of serious injuries, the rate of those, and then non-motorized fatalities and serious injuries. So to meet these standards and be in compliance at the state level, you would have to meet four out of five of these goals annually, or these targets annually. And then our proposed safety performance targets. So the state is the first one to adopt performance targets, and then we can either, as an MPO, accept those targets or create our own targets. And FDOT has established Vision Zero as their target. So you may have all have seen presentations or have gone to different conferences, such as the Safe Street Summit that we just had here in Palm Beach County, that talked about Vision Zero throughout the nation and some other countries. So if you haven't heard about it, Vision Zero is really this notion that all lives matter, right? So we should be doing our best to get to zero fatalities and serious injuries, and no death is acceptable. Because of that, the TPA staff has also recommended Vision Zero for 2018. And then we brought these to the committee, so the Technical Advisory Committee, our Bicycle, Trails, and Pedestrian Committee, and also our Citizen Advisory Committee. and they also unanimously recommended support for Vision Zero. The Citizens Advisory Committee also had a supplemental recommendation there to have our Vision Zero Action Plan adopted by February 2019, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later, and then also for us to begin evaluating current and future CIP projects for how well we are already meeting safety effectiveness. I'm just going to go through a few slides that shows the historical trends of all these measures and charts. It's not too much data. Try to make it pretty easy. But you can see here back in 2006 to 2016, number of fatalities and then also serious injuries. So in 2016, we had 181 fatalities here in Palm Beach County and serious injuries, 1129. And our target, I mentioned again there, is zero. The 2017 data is not all out yet, so it does take some time for it to all get into the system from the Sheriff's Office and up to the state. So those won't be finalized until April. The rate of fatalities and then also serious injuries, you can see here as well, and the values for 2016. And lastly, number of non-motorized fatalities and serious injuries. And something I wanted to highlight on this is this, you see 196 for 2016. This number of non-motorized fatalities and serious injuries is also included in that first total of total fatalities and also serious injuries. And I believe that's around 1,200 or so. And if you were to look at the amount in 2016, 196 relative to the total for the county of around 1,200, that's roughly a little over 15% of the total fatalities and serious injuries happening to those who are walking or biking. So if you think about how many people are using this system out there, how many people are biking, pedestrian, biking or commuting to work through walking compared to traveling by vehicle, disproportionately impacting our non-motorized users. So what are we already doing today to further this safety goal that we've already had for the MPO? Planning, a long-range transportation plan, I mentioned, it is our goal. The projects that you see in the long-range transportation plan and also in our local initiatives and transportation alternatives program have all had weighting towards safety. So if the projects improve safety, they've been given higher weighting in our prioritization process. We've also just completed our complete streets policy design guidelines, and we also have our pedestrian bicycle safety study that was just completed. And you can see an example there of the map, sort of where bicycle pedestrian serious injuries fatalities have occurred. So we have our hotspots and our corridors that show an increase in those fatalities and serious injuries. As I mentioned, the prioritization process has already incorporated it. And then funding for major projects, local initiatives, and transportation alternatives. So what else can we do? So Vision Zero and zero fatalities every year, and serious injuries every year, it's a lofty goal. And so we wanted to show you some things that we can do right now to start meeting those or going towards that target and moving the needle. So some easier ones, leverage road maintenance projects. So, you know, right now, the county has a program out there already and local governments for their resurfacing projects. So, you know, going out there and smoothing between the curbs and then restriping. Well, there's opportunities there to, when you're going out and restriping, does it really require any other acquisition of right-of-way or expansion of the roadway where we can go out there and do stripe-enhanced crosswalks, designated bike lanes, and then mark conflict points. And then longer term for these types of projects for maintenance, if you're looking out to maybe 2022 or 2023 when there's funding available at the TPA level, some of these local governments in the county can start looking into not only doing those maintenance projects, but also maybe doing some other types of improvements while they're out there. So missing sidewalks and bicycle facilities, relocation of bus stops, and then also improved street lighting. And again, I mentioned the complete streets. Continue to try to implement those and push products that really implement everything in that plan And again, we'll mention that the TPA funding programs for local initiatives and transportation alternatives is due March 2nd. And then what we can do in the future. So, you know, this is a lofty goal, a Vision Zero, already for 2018. We're already in 2018. But the staff brings to you today that we can adopt a Vision Zero action plan by 2019. So that gives us a year to figure out and build off of our other documents of complete streets and our bike and pedestrian safety study and bring to the board the actions that we can do to really reach Vision Zero. So policy, design considerations, and then specifics on projects. And then, as the CAC mentioned, we can also evaluate safety impacts of our recent and program projects. And then I have support innovative technology on there. We've also about to ramp up our 2045 long-range transportation plan, right? So there's going to be a larger focus on innovative technologies in the future. So hopefully we can provide something in the LRTP to enhance innovative technologies. And then lastly, create a priority list for safety projects. So there is a state funding source, the Highway Safety Improvement Program, funding that comes down from the federal level, and the state are the ones to allocate that money. So trying to communicate better with the state and trying to make sure we're pushing projects forward that we want to see, that we feel would move that needle towards a safer Palm Beach County. And this is the final slide, just to reaffirm what we're doing today. So 2018 target setting, so we'll be coming back to you next year as well for 2019 target setting. And FDOT has adopted Vision Zero for 2018, and then our TPA staff and committee recommendations is also Vision Zero for 2018.
Thank you, Andrew. Questions? Commissioner Ryan.
Thank you. I don't want to open up Pandora's box, but I've been following the Vision Zero for a long time, hoping that the city would adopt a policy, and I think we're going to. But now with Brightline, we have a whole nother level of fatalities. And I'm just wondering if anybody is talking about that, thinking about that, and including that in our Vision Zero activities.
Well, yeah,
yes.
They're pedestrian and bicycle fatalities. Yes, they'll be included. So, yeah, 2018 is going to have, I would assume, a spike in fatality rates. So. Okay. Mr. Koretsky.
A few things. Number one, I certainly support the Vision Zero, as I'm sure everybody does. Pretty passionate about safety. The data timeliness is something that we'll have to deal with, and I just share an experience that my daytime employer has done for decades, is when data for a year is so slow to conclude, is a rolling 12-month. Because we sit here and we're saying, gee, 16 is this, and you have to know how things are changing. So I just suggest, I don't know how the system is where this information is reported, but if it's practical to get it rolling 12-month, then we would have seen something more meaningful when we're looking for trends and whatever. So that's one item. Secondly, I don't feel right sitting here. I'm going to support it, because I support Vision Zero, but I wouldn't feel right adopting zero fatalities for 18 without at least saying what I'm going to say. And it's also about Brightline, because, if we look to what's happening, and, you know, by the system, we wouldn't see that number for another year, right, if we really had this antiquated system. We wait till year-end to see numbers. That's why you have to have a system that sees the changes. But and I think this may be happening, and we're not impacted in North County yet, but education has to happen with the emphasis on increased speed, because even at those crossings, you know, people are used to knowing how fast something is coming. And so, yeah, someone can say, well, they're trespassers, but I don't use that as an excuse. They need to be educated to recognize they're coming at them a lot quicker. When they get to North County, it's going to be 110 miles an hour. So in good conscience, you can't implement something like that without having a really significant education plan. So I want to just have that on the record. Otherwise, we're kidding ourselves on ever getting to zero. And secondly, there needs to be more emphasis on all areas where there's no trespassing sign, which has been Rails practice at what they call go trails, which is where people normally go, because in areas where there's long stretches of miles, people are going to cross, and they do, and it's known in these goat trails. And FEC's approach is you put up a no trespassing sign, and they're done. And I think as elected officials, a goat trail is an indication that the public goes this way. And so we really have to do something more than just doing the intersections. And I've been advocating that, and I just, as a member here in supporting the zero, I wanted to just emphasize those are two things that have to be done with rail. Is we have to educate, and then we have to not be in denial that it's not just the crossings, it's wherever people by nature have been crossing. We have to be responsible about, and I hope we will, on, you know, sealing the corridor in some way.
Mr. Burdick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had forgotten the term goat trail. That's a great visualization. Can we get a map of those hot spots? Can you digitally send us one of those again? And secondly, we're going to talk about creating a list of safety projects in the future. Can we create, using that map, those safety areas that we need to address? And you know, if we go independent, we'll be able to use more of those dollars towards public education and changing the culture. Is that part of that piece?
I'm going to have to look
at or is it only the advocacy?
Certainly local funds that are provided to the agency could be used for education. I'm wondering about the magnitude of the investment needed to make a difference and whether our local funds are the best source of revenue to look to make a dent. But, okay. But certainly we could, yeah.
I know that through many of our cities, there is a segment of our communities that get to work in the service industry by bike. And reaching out to a population, I think is critically important. I think when we've seen before that map of fatalities, and MPO has gone out there to provide continuing education and families, that we need to continue to do those spot efforts in all of our neighborhoods and cities.
Agreed. Any further comments or discussion? Mr. Abrams.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just a couple of questions. First of all, we're required to adopt a performance measure, but it can be, is it required that we state that it stated as the state is indicating Vision Zero?
So we are required, we have to pass some type of target for these five measures, right? And the state target is Vision Zero for 2018. So we can either adopt their target or create our own target.
And, you know, who can't support zero? On the other hand, who doesn't think that is realistic? So I almost think it might be worth doing it at two levels. Yes, we support the concept of a Vision Zero, of getting to that zero number. By the way, if we agree to that, is that within a certain period of time that we're subscribing to a zero vision or not?
I mean, it is. It'd just be 1 year, and then you come back and you but if you're doing Vision Zero, it's most likely you're going to be doing zero 2019 as well.
Right. You know, I mean, what might be more realistic is some kind of like a 10% reduction per year, or something that is within the realm of reality, and yet, you know, obviously we want to keep the concept, my favorite word today, of zero. So, I mean, I'd like to also include a more realistic standard that we could actually measure. You know, with the county got dinged a little on our, as we concluded the 10-year period on our 10-year plan to end homelessness. You know, it's good to set a goal, but it's also good to show something for it at the end of a year that if you fall short of the overall goal.
Vision.
Throw that out, obviously. I can support it either way.
Mr. Ryan.
Thank you. I just hate to put a number that's above zero out there. One is okay, or two is okay, or three is okay, when zero is the goal, and I think we recognize it's a goal, but I wouldn't want to put a number out there that says
we're
okay with that.
Well, I'm not saying anything is okay, just that in our march to a vision zero, we would show X percent reduction per year.
Sure.
I'm not going to quibble, you know, I'm not going to argue about it.
Mayor Grant.
What was our goal last year?
We didn't have an official target last year.
So this is the first time we're having a target?
Correct.
Okay.
For these measures, yes.
Okay. And yes, it's behooved us to have zero because we've already known that people die within this year, and so we already failed. And that's kind of what we need to make sure that this is the reason why we are doing zero, is that we already know that we didn't meet our goal this year. But it's kind of like what we're doing in the future, is that this is starting January 1st, 2019 is our goal, that we don't have any deaths. One of the things that I also want to have is that we have, like Commissioner Burdick said, is having the map, not just where the hot spots, but just a list of everybody so that we know as a board what areas need to be identified in 2019 because someone has died there in 2018.
Thank you. Mayor Gerwig.
I support Vision Zero, of course. We don't want any. But is there a funding implication by not hitting that target?
Yes, and I'll try to explain this as best I can. So the funds I mentioned earlier, the Highway Safety Improvement Program funds, are coming from the federal government to the state. I had it popped up real fast how much it was to the state. But anyways, it's a little over $100 million, I believe, for the state every year. So if the state were not to meet their targets, and I should state this, that FHWA and the federal government are going and seeing if the state is compliant, right? So they're not coming to any of the MPOs to see if we're in compliance. But the state needs to meet 4 out of 5 of these targets every year. And they can meet the target by either hitting zero for that year, or if they just do better than last year. So if they are not in compliance with this, how would it affect funding? So they would be required to make ensure that all this, their state, the money that comes from the federal government and the Highway Safety Improvement Program, that a little over $100 million goes directly to those safety projects in their state safety plan. Okay. Right now, I believe they use some of that money for some other programs. They're still related to safety. I think they use some of it for, what is it called? I'm trying to think what else they use it for.
Let me help it out. Let me simplify what Andrew's saying. So
sure.
Each state gets a pot of money for safety. Some states flex that money from the safety program to other programs. They flex, yeah. They say, hey, Federal Highway, can we take, you know, we get $100 million. Can we take $20 million and put it on a wider interstate project because we're $20 million short this year? The consequence of not meeting your targets is that you're no longer allowed to flex any of your safety money to any other outcomes. In Florida, that's not a risky consequence because the state of Florida does not flex that safety money to other outcomes. With one small exception, they've actually flexed $7 million statewide from the safety program to the surface transportation program, which lets you operate under slightly different rules, but they actually use that money to operate their Safe Routes to School infrastructure program on an annual basis. So even though they flexed it, they're still doing safety projects with that money. And they've just said, well, sometimes you need to build a sidewalk because it's close to a school, even if you don't have all of the documented crashes that a safety-funded project would require you to have. So they moved it over to the surface transportation program. Now you can build a sidewalk even if you haven't seen a bunch of kids get hit by cars. You know you need a sidewalk, so you just build it. So there are consequences, but they're not onerous. They just say, use the money we gave you for safety to make your system safer. And we're already doing that in Florida.
Mayor McKinley.
You know, I share some of Commissioner Abrams' concerns, too. I mean, this is setting us up for failure every year. You know, and of course, we all want to have a goal of zero fatalities. It's not realistic. And, you know, I've been a grant writer before and was always told, you don't make yourself walk on water, make yourself walk just below it. We could build the absolute safest roads and safest transportation network in the entire country, but a lot of what we see on the roads are user errors, texting and driving, drinking and driving, you know, not wearing your seatbelt, not putting your child in a booster seat. So how much of this is going to be focused on the road systems that we've provided and the safety improvements that we've put in versus, you know, bad decisions by drivers? And I feel like if we don't say our ultimate goal, our vision is zero fatalities, and this is how we plan to reach it. This year we want to have a 10% reduction. Next year we want to have a 25% reduction, and we build something that's a little bit more realistic to reaching our vision. I think we need to be careful that vision is one of the goals or another, and that we should delineate that a little bit in this resolution, because otherwise we're setting ourselves up for failure year after year.
Mayor Marino.
Well, for those of us that went to the summit last week, ironically, in the city of Palm Beach Gardens that afternoon, we had two fatalities. One was a car and motorcycle. One was a car and bike. So while we all would love to have no fatalities, it is not something that's attainable. So if there is a way that we can craft this where we don't set ourselves up to fail, that's something we need to do. So I echo what Melissa said.
Fisher Ryan.
Thank you. So just to be clear, the zero or better than last year doesn't impact funds, and four out of five every year. I mean, I think the Vision Zero is a international program, right? And I'm just curious as to why we would engage ourselves with Vision Zero, but then put a number or a percentage of improvement when there's no impact financially, but it's just it's a vision. And I know that we're not going to get there, but to continue to say we're, you know, working to achieve that, I don't think that there's anything wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on the agenda sheets, it says that we got a recommendation from the committees to support Vision Zero and requested the board direct staff to create a Vision Zero action plan by February 2019. Okay, then though, when you look at the resolution, which I happen to print on a copy because I was very interested in this, the resolution says we're adopting a target of zero traffic fatalities and serious injuries for 2018. Somewhat inconsistent with if you just looked at the agenda, and I just want to emphasize that because most of us wouldn't have the agenda in front of us. I mean, we have the agenda, but not the backup. That's what I was reacting to in my initial comments, and I think a lot of people, first of all, zero fatalities is achievable, and we will get there, but realistically, it's going to be years and years, and you have to have an action plan. So I'm convinced it is achievable. But it's going to be years and years. So I kind of like the idea, and I wanted to point out that this is saying for 18, and we've already exceeded that in 18. How can we consciously say zero when we already know we're above zero for 18? That's why I wanted to point that out. But secondly, if we're going to have one, I like the concept about saying that, no, we want to get to zero, but realistically, because I don't want to mislead the public. We want to get to zero, but it's going to take us years. And it makes sense to have a target of some reduction. I mean, anything less than a target of a reduction I couldn't support, but I think, because even at that, you could argue, population is growing. There's a case to be made that if you were to actually statistically look at it, that it is going to get worse unless you've done something. I kind of like I wanted, again, I think that the number one is maybe the debatable item in the resolution, setting the target in 2018, but that's what was put before us. And why does it have to be 18? And can we not say realistically that, you know, we, for 18, our expectations are that we're going to do things that are going to kind of move the needle, but it's never going to get it to zero in 18.
Mr. Burdick.
I certainly support, and I think we need to, I agree with Jim, look at the dates on this resolution. It's hard to adopt a resolution when it talks about having the plan in place. But Vision Zero, it's our vision. It's what our hopes and our dreams that this is where we're going to get to. And whether it takes us years But that's where we want to go. I think other documents supporting underneath, we can talk about, you know, trying to, our target reduction, we can create our, the data and the goals that we want for each year. But this is our vision, and I think we should support it as is.
But the resolution is not the vision. It's 18.
And I would talk, Nick, how can we, there have been questions raised about the date in here. Can we leave that blank? Can we bring that, I mean, do we want to say 2019? I mean, that seems to be an issue. But supporting this as our vision, vision zero, I think we should be doing that here today.
Madam Chair, if I could respond. By federal regulation, we have to pick a number for the year 2018.
Okay.
You will get a chance to pick another number next year for 2019, but you have to pick a number. Now if you want to modify the content of the resolution to say we're on board with vision,
I don't
want
to pick it apart.
But our number
if that's what the federal government requires us to put in there, and again, this is our hopes and dreams of.
Member Kinley.
Go ahead and move approval of this item, but in the future, could we get this on the agenda in November or October prior so we're not approving this to a month and a half into the current year?
That's a good point. All right, so we have a motion by McKinley. Is there a second?
Perfect.
Second by Berger. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
We'll now move to our information item, Downtown West Palm Beach Mobility Study.
Madam Chair, as he's coming up, I'm just going to introduce Scott Kelly, Assistant Administrator for the City of West Palm Beach. We're excited to hear from them on the mobility study and what they've been focusing on and some of the things that are coming out of that. So without further ado.
Welcome, Mr. Kelly.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm glad to be here. I think you all are aware that the City of West Palm Beach and also actually Palm Beach Gardens have been conducting mobility studies, and this is, to me, very critically important as we plan what our future is, and when we start talking about how we're going to move people, not just automobiles, in the future. Our mobility plan, which incidentally we've now passed the $500,000 mark, so we've made a huge commitment to this. It's a very big commitment to make sure that we do this right. The component parts of this is the actual overlying mobility plan, but we know Okeechobee Corridor is such a big issue within our city, and it impacts multiple stakeholders. So we made this front and center as far as a study of that. I'm going to show you some of the things we just discussed in regard to safety and that sort of thing along there, why it's so important that we put emphasis on that corridor. The next thing, downtown parking management and transportation demand management study. I think we're one of the few municipal governments that have actually included parking and mobility study because it is a principal driver of congestion in our city. And good parking practices are critically important if we're going to make sure that over time that we manage congestion. Citywide bicycle master plan, part of our emphasis for mode shift, for safe streets. So we've done a very comprehensive plan, as well as integrated in that, using Gale Public Life Study. John Gale from Denmark is the company that we've utilized in regard to public placemaking and looking at creating places that are not only desirable from the standpoint that people want to be in those spaces, but also are safe and healthy environments for our citizens to be able to enjoy. The City of West Palm Beach, I think, takeaways here, growing just like other parts of the county. It's important that we look forward, we become forward-thinking in how we're going to manage moving people, and again, not just moving vehicles. I wanted to give you a little background on the modes that people utilize within West Palm Beach. 77% of the people drive in single-passenger occupancy vehicles, okay? Quite large. But on the positive side, 4% of our population is now on foot. So they're commuting, shopping, whatever, on foot. Now, you say, well, that's not that large. I'm enthused about the fact that we have 4%, because that's large compared to a lot of other areas of the city, I mean, of the county and the state. So we're excited about that. We want to drive mode shift, because we feel like ultimately that will end up allowing us to smartly plan for the future of our city. Downtown, I think most of you all are familiar. Again, it's so critical to the economy of our city that we have great public spaces. We have some quarters right now, like City Place on Rosemary, as well as Clematis, that are recognized for the fact that they're great places to be. I just want to announce, and I don't have commission approval, but I have a great commission, and I know that they're going to be along with this, that we're going to be doing some dramatic upgrades to our downtown, starting with the first block of an upgrade to Clematis to a shared street concept flush curb. It's going to be quite nice. Followed by the remainder of Clematis. We're going to move from there to Rosemary to make it a shared street concept, again, flush curb, driven by not just safety, but also by the economics of creating great public spaces for people to be. Now, following that, we're going to be moving to Avernia, Datura. We're also going to complete streets on Banyan as well as Tamarind. So you can see it's quite aggressive program that we're going to be undertaking to upgrade our downtown area. Vision Zero. I've had commissioners that have been bugging me. We haven't had the resources, but we now have the resources in such a manner that we're going to be able to go to our commission, ask for their support on the city of West Palm Beach being the third city in the state of Florida to adopt Vision Zero. You can see the statistics. Palm Beach County was called out nationally for the fact that we have some of the largest rates of fatalities and serious injuries in the country. This is unacceptable, and we're going to change that. And when we talk about being a vision, yes, it's a vision, and yes, it's going to take time to do it, but we got to get started. The city's going to implement the three-legged stool and this is the foundation of Vision Zero, which is number one, engineering, so that we design safe spaces for both all modes of transportation. But we also end up looking at enforcement and education. Well, actually, education first, and then enforcement, because I think that answers Commissioner McKinley's question. Yes, there's an enforcement component, because we want responsible behavior of everyone. We're leading out with an aggressive educational program in regard to the Bright Line. This has enabled us to bring this front and center. It's horrible, the fatalities that occurred, but it's an opportunity for us to do education at this point, and hopefully people will be listening. But we'll move on from there in a quite aggressive way. We're encouraged by New York City, one of the first adoptees in the United States of Vision Zero, 15% reduction. If you saw the statistics of the previous speaker, I did it in my head, so I'm not, you know, our rate has gone up 30 to 40%, okay? We're going the wrong way. So, but it works. And so we're a huge proponent of that. Okeechobee Boulevard, what can I say? Off peak, you don't see it, there's no cars there. You know what this means? That the cars are going very, very fast, okay? And then not only that, but try to walk on Okeechobee at night. There's no lighting, okay? It's a very dangerous environment to be in. So the city, actually, $400,000 of our own money, okay, because we cannot wait to start making improvements on lighting on this corridor. So we're asking our partners in DOT to help us expedite the installation of lighting here, but we're also, as you're going to see further in the presentation, we're going to be looking to partner with all the other stakeholders along here to make some dramatic improvements to this corridor. Just some observations that came out of the mobility study. There's a lot of accidents that occur both downtown and on the Okeechobee corridor, and I think what's important is a lot of these occur at the intersection. So when we start talking about the measures that were just discussed in the last presentation in regard to how do we better define the intersections to make them safer, I think that's really low-hanging fruit for us. We did public outreach. We had a charrette. We had a lot of people show up. I think during the 3 or 4 day charrette, we had 500-600 people show up, so it was very well represented. It was a huge turnout. Came up with a lot of great ideas from the public. And this all wrapped up into our vision where the pedestrian is number one. They're at the top of the pyramid in regard to they're the most vulnerable, and they're the ones that we're going to pay the most attention to, followed by bicycle, of course, transit, and then single passenger occupancy vehicles. Our goal, walkability, what we heard loud and clear is shade, shade, shade. Those were the first three out of the things that we heard. Because it's hot in Florida, and so we're going to produce shade. Our mayor's committed that we're going to plant $1 million worth of mature trees in order to provide not just the benefit of being able to shade for walkability, but also for the health, obviously health and environmental aspects of planting a robust canopy. Increased bicycle network, extremely aggressive. We're doing a real network, tightly gridded network, a lot of new lanes of protected bike lanes, buffered lanes. We're looking at a 600% increase in the bikeway network downtown. So it's a very aggressive goal. We've already started that, we're going to be investing quite a bit of money in that. This is what I feel is one of the most important things we can do. We are so excited about Palmtran and what the direction is going. The leadership there has really been extraordinary in regard to what they're doing in optimizing the bus routes. They've hired someone and a consultant that's very, very good. And in fact, we're hiring the same consultant because they are that good. Jarrett Walker, and we've hired Jarrett company to redo all of our trolley routes, including expanding our routes, going to orthogonal routings. We've seen this been successful in Houston and other cities where they've had a tremendous increase in ridership by smartly designing the routing. Access to transit, we're blessed with multiple transit options, and we're going to leverage those options by creating TODs, transit hubs, integrating these into our overall mobility network in regard to connectivity with other modes of transportation. Driving. As I mentioned, you see Tamarind on here. It's one of the major corridors in regard to the Palmtran because of the Palmtran terminal is actually located west of Tamarind, west of the tracks. And what we're going to do is we're going to manage Tamarind to try to reduce congestion and try to work together hand in hand with Palmtran to best manage the traffic in and out of that terminal, as well as look at the options, Pontran and the city arrived at the same conclusion as some of the traffic actually doesn't, bus traffic doesn't even have to go through the terminal. It can be handled smartly, maybe along along Tamarind, to improve head times on their service. So we're looking at all those options. We're talking about making Tamarind a complete street. We're also looking at, we have issues in regard to connectivity within our downtown. So we're looking at the potential of reducing 600 trips off Okeechobee by a new crossing at Fern Street. So we're actively pursuing that. We're hoping that the county will partner with us on that because it's extremely important for our city. And we think it's very smart policy in order to be able to do that. And so we're just, you know, asking our partner, the county, to participate in that. Complete networks. You know, this just is a summary of our philosophy of actually connecting all these modes together, and we really believe that we can start driving mode shift in our city. Short-term strategies. What we've done is put together six entities together at the table. We're hoping that we can all play in the same sandbox together. That's what I'm hoping for. We brought together the county, the town of Palm Beach. We also brought together the city of West Palm Beach, TPA, as well as DOT, obviously, and Palmtran. So we're all in one room, and we're looking for low-hanging fruit for improvements on Okeechobee, because what I want are wins to where we can show that we can all work collectively together to solve problems, and hopefully one win will drive another win. So these are the low-hanging fruit. Signal timing, we're looking at bridge opening on the intercoastal, perhaps reducing those during peak times, enhancing lighting along the corridor, improving wayfinding, roadway restriping, and of course, as I've already mentioned, new policies in regards to Vision Zero, and then transportation demand management. Just some ideas. Quadrille today, this is what it could be. And we've recently had some serious, we've had fatalities and serious accidents on this corridor. Been in the paper. Here's a short-term improvement, very inexpensively it could be done. Here's a longer-term vision to make this corridor safer. And by the way, the transportation numbers support this, the traffic numbers. Long-term improvements, we're looking at intersection improvements, as I mentioned. It's very important because of the fact that a lot of these accidents occur at intersections, particularly along the Okeechobee corridor. We're looking at east-west mobility hub. The city is actively pursuing the potential to put a mobility hub as part of the redevelopment of the tent site at the intersection of, and this is critical because it's at the intersection of Okeechobee and Dixie, and we've been working closely with Palmtran to look at what that could possibly be. Park and ride, we're serious about this. You know, DOT originally, I think they're a little skeptical about some park and ride, but they've had overwhelming success. Now, of course, this isn't exactly what we're talking about here, but when you go to Broward County and they've implemented park and ride, and they've got standing room only on it, and it's just, and it's a new service. And so it shows that people, if you provide great service, great head times, clean, connected service, that you can get people to ride. First Street Connector are critically important for our downtown in regard to connectivity. Dedicated bus lanes. You know, this is a longer-term proposition, but, you know, what comes first? You know, we hear the story that says, hey, look, you need mode shift before we're going to put bike lane, you know, dedicated bike bus lanes. Well, dedicated bus lanes don't come. The mode shift doesn't happen until you actually put the service and you put the dedicated lane. So what comes first? It has to. We have to look at this smartly and figure out how to do this to break that logjam. Some of the improvements that are going to benefit us is these. A lot of this is just restriping in order to make improvements. And so this is Okeechobee-Rosemary intersection. Could be made quite a bit safer. Tamarind Avenue, You know, this is a very complicated, very unwalkable intersection. But, you know, we're looking at improvements that could, to Dutch-style protected intersection, where both bicyclists as well as pedestrians would be protected from traffic, as well as very clearly marked and delineated actions here so that the drivers and pedestrians fully understand how to engage in this intersection. And that's critically important that we do that. So with that, I've got some more here. Here's some things along Okeechobee, the possibilities. Here's west of Australian. You can look, this is westerly looking towards I-95. Here's what you can start looking at in regard to redeveloping that long-term rapid bus lanes. So with that, I don't know if there's any time to take any questions. But.
Any questions? Thank you, Scott.
Okay.
All right. Chairman Haney had to leave, so I'm going to chair the rest of the meeting. In the interest of time, I think we might skip some of these items unless anybody has a burning desire to hear them today rather than in the future, namely 3B, which is the congestion management process. Would everybody agree that we could put that off? As well as C, the fiscal year 2017 federal obligations report. Okay, partner agency updates. Anybody wish to come forward and give us any? None. Correspondence. Okay, that's just an information item, nothing we need to discuss. On to numeral 4, administrative items, December and January's public involvement activity report. Nick, do you have anything on that?
Yeah.
These are, okay. Okay. Next meeting, March 15th, 2018, Belgrade, so leave early. And Nick, where is the Dollahan Cultural Arts Center? Since Commissioner McKinley is in here, I'm sure she would know where it is. Okay, GPS. Yeah, GPS will work, too. Yeah.
Well, beyond that, Mr. Chair, may I suggest if you want a quorum at this meeting, you might look into a little car sharing, carpooling arrangement?
I might bike. By the way, speaking of that, I noticed that we don't have Bike to Work Day, which we typically have in March. Are we contemplating doing that again this year? Okay, great. Okay, but I would really urge everybody to try to make this Belgrade meeting. It's, I think, true that we don't often get out there, and I think it's a good idea for us to actually be out there and see what's going on. Okay, any further comments from the board? Commissioner Burdick?
Thank you. I'd like to request a copy of the City of West Palm Beach's presentation this morning.
Sure.
And if we can get it by Monday, because I think the commission has a workshop next Tuesday, and it's about the city, one of them is about the City of West Palm. Thank you.
All right. Any additional comments? In that case, we're adjourned. Thank you.